We are activating your unique self-discovery one show at a time. The Orchard of Wisdom Self-Discovery Podcast are at your fingertips, just waiting to inspire and invite you in discovering just how awesome you really are and how to navigate through life in joy, enrichment, personal abundance, in mind, body, spirit, heart, and soul. All the people we bring you are here to serve you on your journey of life. Do enjoy our next show.
Okie doke.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome back to Choose Positive Living right here at selfdiscoverymedia.com. I'm your host, Sarah Tarai, and all the way from Nepal is Tenzin Rose. We're going to be talking about his near-death experience, where he says he actually kind of died. They gave him, you have a few months to live, 6 months to live, because you have cancer of the liver, which we gave you through a drug that we gave you for something else. And he said, okay, goodbye. And he went traveling around the world, and that was 4 years ago. So the positive attitude can really change your entire body and your entire outlook at life. But he is also an author. Alive and Well on Earth is his latest book. And he has several other books that we did a show on quite a number of years ago, The Fearless Puppy. And he's also got Reincarnation Through Common Sense. And I invite you to go and listen to the show that he did with me years ago. The link is here right on his show page with me. And there's a lot to be learned from it. But this is a gentleman that loves to spread his wings. He loves to investigate life, really likes to absorb what's going on around him and take it in, and always with a positive attitude. So no matter what they're saying to him, he goes, I'm going to prove you wrong. And he has this wonderful metaphoric worn stripes with plaid all on his life. He has 30 years experience raising funds at a street level for various causes, while often working under very adverse personal circumstances like cancer. He has also invented and directed charity projects involving rock stars and pro sports teams and governors and mayors and senators. And these projects raised awareness and in some cases large sums of money for others. Much of it was done while Ten, as he likes to be known, he himself remained homeless and panhandled for food on the streets. So this is not somebody that shies away from life. It's somebody that really gets in and like, okay, these are the circumstances. What am I going to do about it? How can I help my other fellow man on the same journey? And live. You remember that four-letter word, folks? Live. We're not dead until we're dead. Live until the very last moment. And Ten is a great example of that. Welcome back, my love.
Oh, it's wonderful to see you, and thank you very much for having me on. I haven't done one of these interviews in about 5 years, and I really wouldn't want to be doing it with anybody else. I just love being with you.
Oh, bless you, my love. You know, we had a little chat before we came on, and I know so many people, quite honestly, die from the diagnosis, not the disease. You know, they give up and this is the end of it all. And the next thing you know, they're dead within weeks. But if we give people a diagnosis, and in your case, it was a drug they put you on for something else and it damaged your liver and gave your liver cancer. Whoops, yeah. From the doctors. And yeah. As you said, you weren't going to waste your energy suing them or anything else. It's like, all right, I'm going to get out there and live for as long as I've got.
Yeah, well, if I would have bothered to like sue them and gone through all kinds of negative and adversarial processes, that would have destroyed me. I mean, that's just reinforcing the fact that I actually have what they are telling me and fighting against it for giving it to me instead of concentrating on just being alive.
Yes. And you probably would have been dead before you would have seen the money, too.
Yeah. No doubt. And there's nothing to step. Most people, one of the main indicators of staying alive is to not be scared of death.
Yes.
You know, yes. You're afraid of dying and you've got that like tensed up, built up, stressed out thing. Then as soon as somebody tells you something that's, you know, against the life force, like a diagnosis, like you say, a lot of these people just give up. when under other circumstances. Look, there are so many people that they get the exact same diagnosis on the same day, two people, and one dies and one doesn't.
Right.
Why?
Right. The big why. Yeah. A three-letter word. Attitude. Right. How much do you want to live? You know, how much do you, we've heard this quite a number of times of people, well, you've only got so long to live. You know, you've got to go into care. You've got to do this. Instead, they pack up and they go around the world and, you know, live way beyond their expiry date, so to speak. And I think a great deal of it is attitude, the positive attitude of, okay, none of us are promised tomorrow. None of us are. I mean, and COVID has really shown us that, you know, when it's your time, it's your time. It's what we do with our time while we're here that counts.
That's exactly it. And a lot of people are not conscious of their mortality, so they don't pay attention to what they're doing every day, and they don't make it a quality existence because they think it goes on forever.
Yeah.
But once you realize that life is finite, you know, it is going to end. You could last, you know, some people die at 12 and some people die at 112.
Yeah.
But someday everybody's going to die. And once you have a grip on that mortality, the reality of it, then you start paying more attention to the value of each day that you're living. And
Purpose is very important, isn't it? I think if you have a purpose, there's something you want to do. There's a reason to get up every day.
Yeah.
And I think that is a really very good medicine for a start, you know, because one thing we don't want to be is flapping in the wind, you know, like, what am I here for? What am I doing? Like, you know, you were panhandling and raising money for other people. It wasn't your situation you were focused on. It was other people's situation you were focused on, which in turn helps your situation because it gave you a reason to go every day.
Well, that's something about that purpose. You say you have to have a purpose, but there's a difference between being self-centered and being centered in self.
Yeah.
You know, now if you're centered in self, you have a greater concern for, you realize that, you know, it sounds like a cliche, oh, we're all one. Sounds like a cliche by now, but the deeper part of it is very true.
Yes.
And once you have a concern for that bigger you, for the more universal you, for everybody in the world, or at least for the person next door, somebody else, your family, whoever it is, if your purpose is, I'm sorry, I can't die now, I have to take care of my kids.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, how many people, we've all heard the stories of women who are single mothers raising children, and they just keep plowing through whatever difficulties come. And then a couple of years after the kids move out of the house, they die.
Yes.
Because they have lost their purpose. That was it. Right? To maintain a more universal purpose, there are always suffering people in the world that need to be helped.
Always. Know? And that always will be, because that's part of the human condition. You know, it's, I don't believe we all have to suffer, though at some point we generally do. But, you know, life is a struggle, and the struggle isn't out to get you. It's out to teach you. It's out to show you why we talk about being part of the collective. And I don't mean the Star Trek Borg. I mean, part of the collective, you know, my analogy is, what instrument are you? You know, you discover your instrument, you learn how to play it, and you find that orchestra in which to play it in, where you can play collectively, harmoniously. We all want to belong to someone. But we want to belong to something that's bigger than us, but we don't want to lose our identity doing it. So becoming a one doesn't mean you abstain being yourself. It means bringing the best of yourself to that collective.
Right. There are both aspects to that. You have to practice your instrument or you'll never get to play in the band.
Right.
But you have to realize that you're just part of the band.
Yes. Yeah. And together, look at the music that you can play. Right. Yeah. But you've seen it. firsthand that when humanity comes together and we aren't doing it for any other agenda than to help people that need help, and collectively we come together, look how uplifting that is, how invigorating it is, how energizing it is. It lifts everybody up that's a participant and a receiver of it into a higher energy, into a higher plane.
Definitely. That's, I mean, there have been so many instances of things like this that you can't really argue with the possibility. Yeah. Yeah, the most successful project that I got involved in was that in the 80s with the African famine relief thing. Mm-hmm. And I organized the state of Massachusetts and part of the Northeast for that. And but the whole planet literally got together and doing that. And you could see people walking around kind of feeling a little bit more human and acting a little bit more human.
Yes.
You know, and when I started that thing in Massachusetts, I was working at a juvenile home and it seeded up from here and then grew to cover the whole state and the Northeast region. But I was working at a juvenile home with some very disturbed kids. Mm-hmm. And we put them on doing a giant tag sale in the town square, and all the money that was made from selling the things that we sold at that tag sale went to the famine relief program. And you should have seen these kids light up. I mean, they turned into all their lives. They had been told they weren't worth crap and they were no good and they couldn't do this and you couldn't do that. And I said, look, you just saved people's lives. Nobody can ever take that away from you for the rest of your life. This is something that you did. And they were lit. They looked like they didn't belong in that home anymore.
Yes.
Like they belonged in a normal school all of a sudden. You know?
Purpose again. You know, we want to feel that, you know, there's a reason for us to be here. Right. And when we can find a reason to be here, when we can feel that we're seen and that we can contribute and that we count, you know, then that changes everything, doesn't it?
Yes. Yes, it does. Yeah.
And all it needs sometimes is a little compassion.
Yeah. Well, if you want to see some compassion, you should come visit me over here.
You're in Nepal right now?
It's incredible. It's not just Nepal. This is the Bodha Stupa neighborhood. There's a stupa is a giant, literally translated from the Sanskrit, it means mound. Mm-hmm. But it's a structure that was built maybe 1,000 years ago, rebuilt after the earthquake. But it has sacred relics built into it. And this is the biggest one, I think, in the world. Certainly the biggest one in Nepal, but it's a certain neighborhood in Kathmandu that's 10 square blocks. And there's over 1,000 monks and nuns, 1,000 Buddhist monks and nuns, besides a bunch of Hindu holy men as well, that live within these 10 square blocks. And a lot of the population that is not monks and nuns, they're Tibetan refugees that had to flee from the Chinese oppression there. And so they're living here as well. And you can feel the compassion in the air. I mean, when you have that many, when one out of every two or three people walking down the street is a professional altruist, and that's what these people are. They have no other profession except to bolster compassion within themselves and within the world.
Yeah. And boy, do we need them.
It's not a rumor. I mean, you can palpably feel the difference in the atmosphere. If you just step outside of the neighborhood, you can feel it. And the rest of Nepal is pretty mellow as compared with America, where I come from. Mm-hmm.
There are a number of countries that are more mellow than the U.S. right now. It's in great turmoil.
Well, and always have been, yeah. Yeah, but This area is incredible. I think it has a lot to do with why I'm still alive too, because that positivity has to be pumped up, and you know, you have to be sending your body messages of it's good to be alive. Yes. I want to live. Yeah. Because if you don't do that, you're going to die. And and it's already taken care of to a certain extent when you're walking around in this like collective, and it's a large collective. There really are about 1,000, and some of them are pretty high level too. It's like 600 lamas over there in the one place. And a lama is like a monk that's achieved some kind of special recognition for some special accomplishments. So when you got that kind of concentration of professional altruists, you can, it's in the atmosphere to such an extent that a lot of that sending your body messages that, oh, I want to live, this is good, I want to hang out here, that's already taken care of for you.
Yeah. Well, it changes the miraculous structure in the body. We know that, you know, negative energy or positive energy has an effect on the body. We're 70% water, right?
Yeah.
Emoto did this wonderful experiment with three glasses of water. Okay. The negative, they ignore, and the positive. And the negative turned dark. The ignored one didn't change at all, and the one that was given positivity crystallized. And if you think about our body, our brain, our body, 70% water, if you're going to feed it negativity all the time, then those waters are going to go dark. Well, those waters are also providing substance for the rest of the organs in your body, right? So, you know, being the toxicity. So if we're around toxic people or toxic situations, it's going to have a negative effect on our body and cause organs to be diseased, right? At disease. And but when you're around the positivity and you're changing that whole miraculous structure of the water in your body, that chi, that energy runs through your body at optimum. And the body has such incredible self-healing modalities within it when you give it the right atmosphere and the right attitude and the right arena for it, and it can be incredibly healing. So it's in the West, we turn to the doctors and the drugs and cut it out and this and that. And then when you go, you know, far east and to places like that where they use kind of some form of prayer or positivity around it, it is incredibly healing to the body, because it's not just an outside in medication, it's the inside out that is the healing modality.
But yeah, it all comes from inside.
Yeah.
Right. I was just watching this Sadhguru guy. I don't know if you've ever seen him, but he was saying something about, and he's talking to the audience and he goes, where am I? Point at me. He goes, where do you see me? Mm-hmm. And everybody points at the stage where he is. And he goes, nah, you got it all wrong. Look, the light is reflecting off of me. It's bouncing off your retina. Yeah. And you know the whole routine. Everything is being experienced in your mind. Nothing is being experienced outside.
Right. Yeah. So it's going in. And then what goes in will manifest what happens next, right? Good or bad.
Yeah, regardless of what goes in.
Yes.
You know, what goes in will definitely have an influence, but regardless of what goes in, you have the final say.
Yeah.
So what you're seeing and how you're reacting to it. You know, we make the whole thing up as far as our reaction to whatever goes on outside. You could, see somebody trip over something and then they get up. And some people will go, oh, that's awful. And some people will go, I can see that he learned now that he has to tie his shoes. And you're looking on the bright side of the situation.
Right.
You make the whole thing up. So you might as well make up some good stuff. Most of the stuff that people worry about, I would say 99 out of 100 things that people are afraid of, never happen.
Yes. They make them happen through worry. They invite them.
Yeah, You can invite them and certainly have them come to you. But, you know, all the stuff that people worry about all day, that's not what you're doing right there. That's stuff that you're making up in your brain.
No, so, they're not being present.
So why, and if you're going to do that anyways, if you're not going to be present and have no thought at all, and you're going to be making something up in your brain, why not make up something good?
Exactly.
Make up that something's going to work instead of that it's going to fail.
Right.
Make up that you're happy instead of that you're miserable. Make up that this person likes you instead of that they hate you, which you have no idea what's in that person's mind, actually.
Yes.
You know, they're dealing with their own little diseases.
Yes. You know?
And that has nothing to do with you. So even if somebody throws a rock at you, that doesn't mean that there's anything wrong with you.
It means you're just in the wrong place at the wrong time. Yeah. No, and we do. We take on, you know, too much. We read too much into things, especially negative things. We do. And then, you know, it's, I remember doing another show on cancer, and this woman, her mother-in-law was literally driving her to death. And, you know, I know I'm going to get cancer from her. I know I am. And eventually when she got into the hospital and they said, you have stage 4 cancer. And she said, I knew it, you know, and it was like, and then it was, you don't need to cut it out. I can cut it out. I'm cutting her out. I'm leaving my husband. And she started to live, you know, and instead of recognizing the problem and dealing with it, it led to the cancer. But that cancer was that confirmation for her. And she ended up curing her cancer by literally cutting this woman and her husband, who supported the mother and not the wife, out of her life completely and healing herself. So, you know, it's, I mean, to get to that stage in the first place, you know, take on the fight beforehand. If you're in a situation that is negative, sometimes it's very hard to get out of, just because of circumstances or this or that. But if you look at it as, well, you know what, it could be worse, you know, and it isn't worse, and it's not going to get worse. It can only get better. And if you look at that, even while your feet are, or knees are knee deep in the molasses, you know, it's okay. I'm not up to my chin. I've still got my arms. I could still pull myself out of it, right? How are we going to get out of that situation instead of wallowing in the situation?
Yeah, because, I mean, there are situations that people say, oh, it's so hard to get out of it. Yeah. I can't get out of this situation. What am I going to do? But if you look at the implications of the situation, if they're that bad, then whatever you jump into next, you may be afraid of it because it's the unknown, and people are habitually afraid of the unknown. But if your situation that you're in is that bad, how bad is it going to be where you're going?
Yeah.
You know?
You survive that. The skills and the tools that you learned to survive that, you can apply to the next.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. I know women who have been battered by their husbands, and I know some husbands that have been battered by their women, but I know some that have just stayed there because they say, I got to raise the kid and I have no means of support. And so, but the kid always ends up screwed up and ended up in prison when they get older anyways, from growing up in an atmosphere like that. And I know other women who were in the same situation, a very similar situation. I guess none of them are exactly the same. And a very similar situation. I said, I don't care. I don't know. I'm going to the shelter. We'll see what happens next. I'm not going to have my child or myself around this. And they do a lot better. A lot better than once you're resigned. It's like that. It's like that dying from the diagnosis thing. Almost. Once you're resigned to that, the situation you're in is something that you're stuck, that you can't do anything about, that you're powerless about it, you're screwed. I mean, that's, you have to make some progress from there and realize that anything can be changed. That's the only constant. There is nothing constant except change.
And that change is up to you. I mean, I was in that situation, not physical beating, but brow beating. So, And it, I know I kind of talk myself into it's only happening to me as long as the children are all right. And then, you know, kind of started happening to the children. And it's like, I'll wait until the youngest one has left school, you know, to provide them, you know, with that home. I didn't want to put them through anything. And then it was the kids coming to me saying, this is ridiculous, divorce. And, yeah. you know, and it was the kids saying, we're tired of seeing you like this. It's time for us all to be free. And yeah. and in that permission and in that freedom, yes, they went on their own self-discovery. Yes, they made a couple of wrong moves. But love was always the key that always brought them back to center. Because no matter what had happened to me and what was going on between their father and I, they knew I loved them to death. I loved them. And that even if they made a mistake, it being, you idiot, you shouldn't have done that. Now, what are we going to do to get back up on here? That was always the attitude. Learn from it. You know, why don't you pay attention to the signs? You didn't. Next time you will. But I love you. And love was never a part of the training. And love always brought them back, even if they kind of took a road that was dubious for a while. Yeah. Love is that we all want to love someone and we all want to be loved by someone. But first and foremost, we have to learn to love ourselves. Because we are the love that others seek and we are the love that others are attracted to. So instead of looking for love to complete you or heal you, we've got to be that love of self to heal ourselves.
Well, this is not only the love, but the intelligence and the wisdom. This is a big tenet. This is a big thing with the folks around here in the monastery, is that you're not going to fix the world externally. No. There's nothing going to drop from the sky that's going to suddenly make everybody act nice. Each individual, 7 billion individuals, each individually has to work on instilling a little bit more love and compassion into their existence with how they feel, how they think, what they do. The mental work has to be done by each individual.
Yes.
One of the major drawbacks, and Christianity is based on the compassion of Jesus, but one of the major drawbacks is that so many people are waiting for somebody else to come back and fix their problems. Not going to happen.
Nope.
It's not a possibility.
Nope.
You have to get up and fix what's in your own brain. Get that I want to live message, that I love you that much, that I want you to have a good life. Go ahead and do it. And when that radiates, you give everybody around you permission to do the same. If you're walking around constantly complaining and being nasty and evil, then it turns the whole tide. That's why this neighborhood is so amazing, because everybody here is working on, you know, fixing whatever their little problems are. And these people aren't perfect, you know. Just because they have a robe on doesn't mean they instantly attain perfection.
Holier than thou. Yeah. That's an illusion, yes.
That means just the opposite. It means that they're working on it.
Right.
That they have something that they have to work on and that there is no perfection. All right. And when you're working towards it, that's what each individual has to do, because nobody, you know, too many people are waiting for something to come from outside to fix what's wrong with them inside. Not going to happen.
No. No, there's a beautiful word that I discovered a couple of years ago, and it's one I use a great deal, is flawsome. To be flawsome. There isn't any single one of us that doesn't have a flaw, right? But we could be awesome in our flawsomeness. Yeah. It's like, you know how the Chinese take a broken bowl and they fix it with gold, and it becomes something even more profound because of it, right? And it's like, that is how I look at being flawsome, is that we've all made mistakes or things have happened to us. We've all had to pick ourselves back up again. But with every crack, with every break, we can fix ourselves with that thread of golden love that strengthens us even more. So in our flawsomeness, we become even more beautiful and more unique.
Yeah, That's very nice. I didn't know that about the gold and the bowls and everything, but that's yeah, that's great.
And if we look at ourselves that way, you know, we're inclined because society demands us to be this illusion thing of perfect. What is perfect? It's different in everybody else's eye, right? It's and to live up to an expectation, which is who the hell created that? Because that's delusional, and you know,
that's an unattainable goal.
It is, and look at the people who kind of sold their souls to obtain it, and to realize it's an empty promise, that there is nothing there. All the glory and all the love and all the everything else that you thought you were going to get. The bar keeps being pushed higher because that's not what you're meant to be chasing. It's not the outside journey of perception that you need. It's the inside one. Everything is inside of us. And when we can go inside and heal ourselves from our own mistakes and love ourselves because of it and what we've learned from it, show that compassion to ourselves, that's when we discover that self-love.
Yes, ma'am.
That's what you did to yourself, right? You said to hell with the doctors. You didn't take any medication, no therapy, nothing. You thought, okay, whatever time I've got, I'm going to get out there and live. I'm going to love me and love life and love the experience. And look at you, 4 years on, stronger than you've been.
Yeah, well, I have a lot of experience doing that. I grew up in Brooklyn in the 50s and 60s. So you kind of had to like realize real quick that what was outside and what you were watching, all the violence and all the greed and everything that was going on at the time, and only graduated since then, unfortunately, but that's not what I want to be.
Right.
I mean, and so many people can't really figure that out because they don't have the opportunity. I mean, we were kind of lucky that all the LSD was around to throw us outside of the box a little bit. Because so many people feel like they grow up and they see what's around them. And look, even the bigots that grow up and lynch Black people in the South, they have seen nothing else. Their parents taught them that. Their parents' parents taught them that. It's no excuse. It has to be fixed immediately.
Somebody has to stop the cycle. Yes. But it's somebody who knows that there's something else to replace it with.
You got to break the link in the chain and then like get your own thing going. But so many people are like, they're caught in a river with a very fast current. And they see no bank on either side, river is wide. They don't know that there's a bank on either side. They can climb the hell out of the river, get up on the bank, and go do something else entirely different than be swept away by the current of social pressures, which is what happens to most people. They just get washed away by the atmosphere around them, as opposed to even having an individual existence of their own, that they can say, you know, yeah, this is me and that's that. They're so blended into the society and whatever anybody else says and keeping up with the Joneses and doing the pattern.
Or Cardassians nowadays.
Yeah, trending. Trending, going with the trends, whatever it is.
You know? Being sheeple.
Yeah.
Right? Erring along, you know, not taking any accountability or responsibility for your own life. Yes, so it sucks that that happened to you. But what are you going to do about it? Why didn't you change the dialogue? Instead of it happening to you, it happened for you. It was for you to just discover courage, strength, abilities that you didn't know you had, and maybe even your purpose to come out of it. It's that if we stop playing the victim all the time, and we start looking at, this is a lesson. This is an education. What am I going to learn from this? How am I going to apply it? How much stronger am I going to be because of it? And those that are willing to learn through it and go through that process are the ones that come out so much stronger, with so much more purpose and so much more to give, because they've become so much more that they've given to themselves.
Yeah. And one good thing about technology is that all these people who for a bazillion years have just been brought up in little inbred villages where all they see is what the whole world is to them. Now, all of a sudden, people who have been brought up with for hundreds of years in systems of bigotry and stupidity and all kinds of selfishness can get exposed to different points of view. When I was growing up, where it was the drug culture that, for better or worse, and for worse for a lot of people, they took the right choice and wrote it out of off the edge of the map.
Yeah.
A lot of people died from it, but that was the choice at the time that knocked most people out of the box. Currently, it's the technology.
Yes.
And you have an opportunity to just even accidentally wander across somebody with a different point of view than you have. And that's where it begins, because you're always stuck in that current, in that river that's carrying you downstream. If this is the prevalent point of view in your area, in your family, and in your town or state or whatever it is, then you don't know that there is something
anything else
to be thinking and doing.
Looking at the drugs of the 50s, 60s, and 70s, you know, as you said, like LSD, etc., they were drugs that people were taking to have an out-of-body experience. It was an investigative type thing but now we're seeing opioid deaths left, right, and center. It's more of an escapism because they don't want to deal with the realism of life.
Yeah. Well, that's the out of body experience because the LSD was actually, you could talk about out of body experience, but if you look at it, it was really the in body experience that was happening.
Yeah.
Whereas the real escapism,
heightening of senses, right?
Right. The real escapism now, as you say, is with the heroin and the opiates and these various things that just
mind numb.
They close your mind as opposed to open it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And you don't want to talk to yourself as opposed to you're having an expanded conversation with yourself over the ordinary.
Exactly. And, and talking about the technologies, where it is an absolute gift, I can't do my shows without this technology. It opened up my world 10 and a half years ago. And, I can interview people from around the world, which is wonderful. It's made all of that love and information more obtainable. But then we also have, as with everything, because we're opulent people as human beings, is saturation. And people don't know how to be discerning. And technology now has become a different form of drug in the sense that people have become mindless with it rather than mindful because of it, right? And again, that goes back to our own responsibility, our own accountability of, are you just going to switch to another river and go down a different stream of mindlessness? Or are you going to look at the information and go, I want to go down that stream of mindfulness?
There you go. Yeah, you have to keep track of whatever you're doing. It doesn't matter whether it's attitudes or drugs or food. You can kill yourself with water if you.
Yes, you can drown yourself. You literally can. Yes.
Yeah. You don't respect it properly. So you have to have, like you say, discernment and respect for all of these things and recognize what it is you want to absorb and what it is you don't want to absorb, because it's all about the choices you make and which wolf. Well, the old Cherokee legend has a story in the beginning of the book within the first 20 pages somewhere, and it pretty much sums up this point. There's an old Cherokee legend about the child who asked the grandmother, what makes some people good and what makes some people bad, and the old grandmother says, every person has two wolves that live within them. And one is good and one is evil. And they're constantly battling with each other. They may find places to overlap out of necessity every once in a while, but they're really constantly battling with each other for possession of that person. And the kid says, well, which wolf wins? And the grandmother says, whichever one you feed. you know,
Yes, it's very,
and
it's
that goes
beautiful
to how
wisdom, that one.
making choices
Yeah.
to be moving in the direction that you want to go in,
Yeah.
not to be pulled in the direction you don't want to go in by some external force.
Right.
That internal power has to take control over the external coercion and make sure that you're moved in the direction you want to go in, because otherwise you just get batted around, like, you know.
And popularity is not love.
Oh, no.
You know, people that are very popular, people that are being followed and this and that, a lot of people are just waiting them for them to have a train wreck.
Yeah.
Right? You know, it's waiting for them to fall. And then the vultures are out there. It's like the Walking Dead. They're going to tear the body apart, right? It's
waiting for them to fall, or they want something from them.
Yeah, exactly. You know, that love that you're seeking outside can only be found inside. And once you find that love inside, you don't need to seek it outside, because you have become the love. And love attracts love. Right? You will find those loving people because you have become that love. You've changed your entire signature of your energy and your frequency, right?
At that point, you don't have to advertise either.
No.
It just radiates off of you.
Yes.
People feel like, I mean, we've all felt that. You go into a room with somebody who's really aggravated and nasty, and the whole room feels tight.
Yes, it's like a bad
and you
taste.
Go into
yeah.
a room with somebody who's like pleasant and sweet and having a good time and happy, and the whole room feels like that. So,
yeah. And, you know, I'm always saying that inspiration begets invitation. When you're around people that inspire you, it invites you to seek more inspiration within you and around you, because you know how it feels. It elevates you. And we need, as a human race, to be elevated. I think one of the reasons we are so, oh God, you know, one of the reasons that there's a Celtic rune called Haglas, and it means disruption. And, you know, about 5 years ago, I got given a saying saying the universe is going to shake us up, to wake us up, for us to step up, change it up, and grow up vibrationally, but grow up as a human race. We're so petty. We're so small when we have the ability to be so grand. And so big in our presence, our positive presence. And we keep looking for the heroes to come and save us. The only person that can save you is yourself and your alignment with the higher energies.
Yeah. Yeah, you have to, like, not only be your own hero, but be the society's hero. And it's not really even being heroic. It's just being common sensible.
Yes.
You know, everybody's trying to be good and be great and everything. But if people were just sensible, I mean, it just makes more sense to be happy than it does to be miserable. This isn't rocket science.
No, and it's also, you know, there's two words that I don't like when it comes to a person: comparison and competition. When you're comparing or you're competing with others, you are going to let yourself down. You are never going to succeed because you are trying to emulate somebody else, which is not you, and you're competing against someone else, which is not your competition. Leave that for the sports or for games, right? I know when I started this 10 and a half years ago, I would get all sorts of advice on how I should do it. I still get that. Oh, you should do this. No, you should do that. You should do this. You should do that. And I say, the beautiful thing about any of our podcasts, free will, you can tune in or tune out. You don't have to listen if I'm not your cup of tea, if my style is not your cup of tea, if my kind of guests are not your cup of tea. Nobody says you have to listen for the hour plus if you feel you've had enough and you want to call it quits for the day or come back and finish it another day. There is no hard and set rule. And I'm not trying to be anybody else in the way of the interviewing. I'm simply Sarah. And if we are authentically just bringing our own presence forward and just being ourselves, we put others, I hope, at ease to be themselves.
You hit a key word there with that authentic. I wrote a whole chapter in the book about being authentic. And that's really a key. I mean, you'd have to start with talk about you got to love yourself, you got to have compassion, you got to this, and you got to, there's got to be a you there first
Yes,
to
yes.
do that. It's got to be the real you. You can't be like trying to be somebody else. I want to look like that. Want to have what that person has. I want to be where that person is. You're you, all right? And
And embrace the best of you. Right? Yeah,
So the more,
if we're going to compare, we're demeaning ourselves.
the authenticity is a very important thing because it's the starting place
Yes.
for all the rest of the work. If you're not you, then somebody else is doing what you think you're doing,
Yeah. And what
you
does
know?
it say? Just be you, everybody else is taken. Right? And I think that, one of the things that society has done for quite some time, but especially when it came into any form of media, movies or anything else, media is, are we enough? Are we enough in our authenticity? Are we enough just being ourselves? And for a long time, it was, no, I'm not enough. I have to be someone else. And now that the circle has gone round, and like everybody else is taken, it's too much energy to try and be someone else. I'm just going to be myself because I'm enough.
Well, because you don't have a choice, because in the long run, you're just going to be yourself anyway.
Yes, you can't outrun yourself.
You can be an artificial self, or you
Yeah.
can be an authentic self, but you're just going to be yourself.
Yeah. And it doesn't matter where you go or what you do, you can never outrun yourself.
Yeah.
You're going to
There's
have
no.
to face yourself somewhere along the line.
Yeah, all those opiates aren't going to get you away from yourself. Even if, well, the theory is that even if you die, you haven't gotten away from yourself. There's
Right,
still
exactly. No,
fundamental
you're
energy there.
coming back to learn the lesson you didn't learn this time.
I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't say that I know about that whole process, but so they say, regardless in this life, which even if you believe this is the only life,
Right. It's the only life you have right now.
that definitely, and also whatever is going to happen in the future is determined by what you do here regardless. So if there
Yes.
is such a thing as any future lives or anything like that it's only determined by
100%.
what you're going to do here. If there's any truth to any law in the universe, it's the law of karma.
Yes. Oh,
It's
yeah.
not as linear as people think it is. It
No.
doesn't mean if you steal $20, somebody's going to steal $20 from you. But it does mean that there are repercussions to your actions. There are consequences for each action
Yes.
and results of each action. And that one thing follows another, depending on the causes and conditions that are there. Your action is going to influence what your next action is to a large extent.
Yes.
Whether or not that carries into the next life is pretty inconsequential
Yeah.
because it shows up so readily in this life.
Yeah, oh boy, does it. Oh boy, does it. And the other thing is know what seeds you want to plant. And when you plant them, water them and nurture them, but allow them to grow. Don't pull up the roots. Don't dictate where and what they should grow into. Allow them to grow. But first and foremost, what seeds are you planting? Because you may be planting some seeds that are going to take you down the wrong river. So, be mindful of the seeds that you're planting. And make sure you water and nurture them and allow them to grow. In other words, allow yourself to grow into who you're meant to be by experiencing the now, each and every moment, being present, because this experience of the now is going to dictate what seeds need to be planted for tomorrow.
There, well, there's an old expression, you'll never get apples by planting on an orange tree.
Why not?
It doesn't work that way.
It doesn't work that way, no.
You gotta take plant care of and nurture the plants in order to get them to grow properly. And it requires a lot of patience. You can't stand there and yell at the plant. Come on, I want to see the flower. Leave it alone, it's going to become a flower.
And that's us, right? Our own growth is that same thing. Be patient with yourself.
Yeah.
Just because you want to change, it's not going to happen overnight. And you're probably going to feel like sometimes you're in a maze. And it's like, how do I get out of it? Well, don't concentrate on the getting out of there. Concentrate on why are you in there and what are you meant to be learning in this maze? Because then the exit will show itself.
A little bit more readily than if you panic and start running into the sides of it. That's
right,
sure.
Exactly. What's the biggest lesson you've learned yourself in saying, no, cancer, you ain't got me. I'm going to get out there and live. What's the biggest lesson you've learned for yourself in all of this? Because now it is 4 years later. You're still very much living. Yeah, you've obviously had some health issues. As you said, you lost a lot of weight, but you haven't even gone back to a doctor to find out if you're cancer-free. You just know if you are or not. But what's the lesson you've learned? What's the biggest one?
I think it's what we've been talking about, that everything is generated internally. Mm-hmm. All right. Now, there must have been some conditions I was dealing with that made me get sick enough to have that, primary liver condition that allowed the doctor to give me the wrong medication that produced the eventual fatality that I had to eventually say, now, wait a minute. All of this is not as important as staying alive and keeping doing what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. I think it's the internal generation as opposed to the external coercion. Yeah.
Yes. And just one day at a time, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's all there's no choice about that. You can look at it in a different way, but that's what it is.
Yeah.
It's 1 minute at a time, 1 second at a time.
Being present.
And the other thing is it could end any minute. So be conscious of where you are and what you're doing. And if you know that you could die any minute and you have, or 10, 20, 30 years, you don't want to die tomorrow, but I mean, just recognize the possibility that it could happen at any time. And life is a finite experience. It does not go on forever.
Exactly.
And that gives you an appreciation of the present tense.
Right.
Because it's going to be over. You're paying more attention. You don't have time for some nonsense. You don't have time to like argue with idiots that you're not going to make any sense with at all. You can't argue with a drunk. You can't argue with alcohol. You can, the same person, you can wait till they sober up, try to make sense with them then. But once they're drunk, you're not going to make any sense. You just wasted an hour or two of your life arguing with them.
And then the same goes with the people who are unwilling to make these changes, are playing the blame game. It's everybody else's fault. They've all done this to me. Well, there's three fingers pointing back at you going, well, what are you going to do about it? Because that freeing of yourself from what you call imprisonment is up to you. You've got the key.
Yeah, and if they did it to you, why did you let them do it to you?
You're right. Unknowingly, fine, fair enough, but now you've woken up. Yeah.
It's a nonsense because you only do things to yourself anyways. Your whole attitude and how you react to something, you don't have any control over what goes on outside.
Yeah.
But you always have control over how you're going to react to whatever happens outside.
Yes.
So if you put yourself in a position where you can be abused, then you're going to be abused.
Yeah.
If this, you know, circumstance has put you there, you have to make the decision that you want to get out of that situation and take the action that comes with that decision,
yeah,
which is to get out of it. It's all a matter of personal choice. Admittedly, some people have a lot more to deal with. This might be easy for us chunky white people to say,
yeah,
we weren't brought up in, well, actually I was brought up in, and you know, but that's another story. But most people that we know have had relatively comfortable upbringings as compared to, I see these people on the street over here walking around with begging cups and missing limbs and mothers with little babies and they got nowhere to sleep and they're part of beggar cartels, half of them. And admittedly, there are things that are tougher to get out of,
yes,
than other things.
But that's right? Also where it then, you know, comes the compassion of those who are witness to it. Not everybody has to do everything on their own. I think the biggest leap is that first step. And one of those first steps is to ask for help.
Yeah.
You don't have to do it alone. But until you ask for that help, you are alone.
Yeah, well, a lot of people are in a situation where they don't have the option of even asking for help. Mm-hmm. You see these, a good example, because there's a lot of beggars around here. Any holy area is going to attract mm-hmm. people that, you know, because the people that go to worship think that if they, you know, they're more compassionate. It's like everybody's in church around here.
Yeah.
You know, it's always on the best behavior in church. So it's kind of like that. So the beggars congregate quite a bit, and they know they might have been born doing this kind of work.
That's all they know.
Realize that they have the option to ask somebody for help. And something has to trip your trigger.
Yes. Yes.
You know?
Yes.
You have to have something that trips your trigger. It has to be internally generated, but it certainly helps to have some external influence. And that's where the choice comes in. Mm. You got to choose what you want to pay attention to and realize that you want to be happy. And again, it's a lot harder for some people, you know, than it is for others. I consider myself as having it had relatively, after looking around in Asia here, you know, I consider myself as having had it relatively easy. And I was a heroin addict sleeping in stairways, brought up in a very violent neighborhood. It wasn't easy by common white people's standards,
right,
by any stretch of the imagination. But compared to what some of these people are dealing with here, it was a day at the beach.
Yes.
And so I'm not, you know, downplaying the fact that some people have a very difficult road to hoe here, and it's not going to be easy. Nonetheless, no matter where you're starting from, it still starts with the conscious decision that you want some improvement to happen, and you're going to keep pointing in the direction of improvement instead of just giving up and settling for whatever kind of degeneracy you're stuck in and would rather be out of. You can be at the bottom of the bottom of the bottom, and in the worst possible circumstances, you still have to make the conscious decision that you want to move towards something better. And once you start producing that thought process that points you in the direction of something better, you start making better decisions as you go along. And little by little, these things will improve. They have to. It's like walking. If you put one foot in front of another and keep moving in the same direction, eventually you have to get to where you want to go to. So not to, again, can't downplay that some people have a much longer road to travel.
Yeah. Yes.
But nonetheless, in spite of no matter where you come from, what you've been dealing with, or where you are, you have to start somewhere. Start small. Start with just saying, I want to be alive.
Yeah.
And I want being alive to be an enjoyable experience and keep pointing at whatever will facilitate that thought into becoming your actual functional reality.
Yeah.
And at that point, you have to start making progress. Like yes. I said, it's like walking. It's 1 foot in front of the other. You have to get to the other side of the room if you keep moving.
Right. Well, you know, this particular show genre is Choose Positive Living. And when you do choose to live positively, even if you have a bad day, it's just a bad day. It's not the end of it all. You know, sometimes it's going to rain, you know, on your journey. Look at it as watering the land for you ahead of you. We can always turn something, a negative, into a positive in some way or other. And there's so much. I used to have a program called The View of Life, which is a metaphorical journey that people have to go on. And each thing that they do has a meaning. And it would always fascinate me of how many people are disconnected from their own awareness, from the signs, you know, come this way, come that way. Listen to this. I've got wisdom for you. This means that. And it's how they ignore it, because they become very linear, or they just switch off from people. I don't know what it is, but they're not functioning on all of the cylinders. Right. And so, you know, and when you're not, it is, you're just puttering along, trying to survive the day instead of thriving the day. And when you are actually open up your awareness, you know, let your whole senses feel, then you're going to pick up on the things that you need to know when you need to know it, that's going to help you take that next step.
Yeah.
Awareness.
It's again, it's that automatic pilot being carried by the current in the river kind of thing. And they don't realize they can get out on either side. And
big branch here you can grab hold of. There's another hand over here that's willing to grab you. But all you're aware of is you're in the rapids and you're not seeing anything else. Open up the awareness. Take the flappers off the eyes. There is always some form of hand or solution that's willing to help you out of the situation, but you've got to be a participant. You've got to be open and aware to what is around you. And not only, let's not forget gratitude when you do get out and when people are there to help you, but also that willingness to participate in your own life with a positive attitude, with a curious attitude. Having wonderment for life, because that's, I think, what waking up every day, what does the day hold for me? That wonderment is a beautiful generator.
Yeah, well, it's nice if you can pull it off. Some people don't have that option. Yeah. But,
no, and it doesn't come easily if you are coming from a place where you feel you've been buried. You know, when you literally kind of feel like you're coming back out of the ground again. No, it's not the first thing you're going to feel. But again, I think it's that attitude. What do you want to feed?
Yeah.
Right. If you want your life to mean something, if you want to feel the joy of life, if you want to step into love, then you have to be willing to work on it. It doesn't just happen because you've opened your arms and said kumbaya. It happens because you're willing to take the journey and work on it.
Yeah.
And you're a prime example of that. You've done that every day, right? And I'm sure you've had some days that have been hard, and days that you've fallen, but you've chosen to get back up.
Well, you have to.
Mm-hmm.
You have to. If you stay down, it just gets uglier.
Yes. You get to a point where gosh, I haven't got any legs to stand on anymore. Right? Even if you're wobbly, just get back up, right? That's the important thing. What's next for you?
What's next? Well, I don't know. I'm just going to keep trying to. Well, I'm giving this book away free. The book is next.
Yes. Why are you giving it away free?
Excuse me?
Why are you giving it away free?
Because I want to.
Bless you.
First of all, I want to. All right. Second of all, it's almost impossible. We didn't get into any of this, but the goal is still the same as it was with the first two books. I want to sell enough books to raise enough money in order to be able to sponsor a large growth in the number of wisdom teachers, meaning building huts and providing for new monks and nuns, as well as like somebody has a radio show like yours and they want to expand it or something. If they're doing anything wisdomist, I want to be able to sponsor all these efforts. So that's what it was always about. And I'm giving this one away free because it's a roundabout way of getting it done. The major part of why I didn't raise enough money with the first few books, even though they had 5 stars, both of them all the way across, there was nothing less. But it's the circulation.
Yes.
You can't get a book distributed properly enough unless you're like, you know, somebody who already has.
Yes.
So
in order a huge costly marketing campaign.
Yeah, and that doesn't work too often either. Mm-hmm. So in order to do this, I want to get the exposure first. The book is good enough that it's going to circulate if people will open it and read it.
Yeah.
Give it away free.
Yeah.
I'm giving it away free. It's available at the website and a number of other places for free. And if the people read it, all I'm asking them, it says right on the front page, you don't have to pay for the book, just pass it around to someone else.
Right.
If they keep passing it around and the book gets extensively passed around, eventually the money will happen.
Yeah.
I'm not worried about the money. That always works. Eventually the money will happen. It's got to get the exposure first, and by regular means and methods, unless you have like millions of dollars or you're Hillary Clinton or Deepak Chopra or somebody that's right. And not that I mean to put those two in the same class, but unless you're somebody famous enough that's writing a book and getting that kind of exposure anyways, it's not going to work. So I'm thinking this method is kind of the best shot that I have at reaching goal, which is to sponsor an increase in the number of wisdom teachers on earth. Because anybody who reads a newspaper knows we need more wisdom.
Oh gosh, yes, I 100% agree with you. Yeah.
If folks want to see the book for free, it is at www.fearlesspuppy.info/new book. All right. And you can get it there free. Knock yourself out, folks in listener land. Give it a 20-page trial, and I'll be surprised if you don't want to read the rest of it, because the first two had all 5 stars, and I've only gotten better as a writer. This is no great accomplishment. I don't care what you do. If you do it for 20 or 30 years, you're going to have to be better after 30 years of doing it than you were when you started. So every book gets a little bit better. Hopefully that's the way it's supposed to work. And it has in this case. So I think people will like it. It's got some of the stuff we've been talking about, but there's a lot of travel adventure in there and other things that are a little bit, well, it's more like a common exciting adventure story, all right, with a lot of this spiritual stuff we've been talking about couched into the format of the adventure story. So it should be pretty easily readable, even for people who look at what we've been talking at for the last hour as New Age horseshit.
Yeah, they wouldn't have lasted an hour if they thought it was horseshit.
Yeah, that's right.
Exactly.
But even if people have that kind of attitude, like this all sounds a little bit too, they're going to like the book anyways, because it's an adventure story about a guy from a mafia neighborhood who was an ex-junkie and had cancer and fixed it himself and started traveling around the world. And the kind of adventures that kind of person would happen, which are not all, you know, lattes and cupcakes.
Right. No, some real ones. And you know, sometimes, you know what it is faction is greater than fiction. You know, you look at it and think, oh, that can't be real. But then, you know, somebody has actually gone through it, and it's like, wow.
I get a lot of that.
Yeah. And of course, if people want to, they can go to Amazon and put it in your name, and all of your books are up there, so they can purchase all of the books as well. And the Amazon is Doug 10 Rose, and they just put in that full name, and your other books are there, and they can support you, you know, on that as well. As you said, you've got a cause here. You're wanting to do something for a reason, and I'm with you on that. That is something that I'm trying to do. I'm expanding out myself, and because, you know, 3,000 shows of people that have stepped up to try and make a difference in other people's lives, to motivate, to inspire, to nurture, to guide. I wanted it to be more than that. And so, yes, we need to support each other on that journey, because there's people like you who have decided to live in the present, decided to live optimistically, decided to embrace every day in love and compassion and joy, that is literally going to change the planet and save the planet. So the more we have of you out there, the better we're all going to be as a human race.
And a lot of that kind of stuff does show up in all three books. Mm-hmm. The first one is Fearless Puppy on American Road, and that's been the most popular one. That is at Amazon. Well, all three books are at Amazon. I had to even put the last one on for $1.11, because you kind of have to be on Amazon to do other advertising things. It seems like Amazon's pulling the strings on a lot of what seems like other independent companies.
Yeah.
So the book is available for free at my website, but it's also on Amazon for $1.11, which is as cheap as I can make it and get away with it.
Right.
And the Fearless Puppy on American Road is for sale at
$5.95. Yeah, both of them are $5.95.
Which is 40 years of hitchhiking around America, which I did. These are all true stories, by the way.
Right. Yes, and our last show was on both of them. Yeah.
Fearless Puppy is about 40 years of hitchhiking around America and the various adventures in different towns. The second book was Reincarnation Through Common Sense.
Excuse me.
Second book is Reincarnation Through Common Sense, and that's about living in a temple in Thailand, a Buddhist temple, not your standard living in a temple. I wasn't studying Buddhism. It's kind of a psychotic alcoholic at the time, and they took me in and basically adopted me. I mean, I didn't even go there. Most people, if they went there at all, and this was a very remote temple, so very few white people had ever been there. But if they took you in at all, it was to be a student of Buddhism, and you had to learn the Thai language, everything else. They just took me in, and they felt sorry for me and adopted me, kept me there for half a year. So that's a pretty interesting story, especially since I didn't speak a word of Thai and nobody there spoke English. And
it showed there's another language there, right? We don't always need the tongue language, yes.
Just amazing, because once you are not on a verbal communication level, then other things start to happen.
Yes.
There's other communication nuance. You can see something in a hand movement that you never, that's a paragraph, a whole sentence, maybe a paragraph even, in just like a slight hand movement that somebody makes. There actually is, so people would bring me things as I was thinking about asking for them.
Stuff
like that actually happened. I'm as cynical as anybody else. I don't believe anything. I don't believe anything. I either know it or I don't know it. Right. I just don't believe. I think belief puts a restriction on your thought process, because once you believe something, you're in that belief box that stops you from thinking any further.
Unless you believe that anything is possible and you're open to any possibilities, and then it's ad infinitum.
You're open to any possibilities, but when you believe, most people use the word believe to substitute for a fear they have of not knowing.
Yes.
So you either know something or you don't. If you don't know it, a lot of people that don't know what happens in certain situations will just believe something because it makes them sleep better at night. It makes them feel more comfortable. To me, it's horseshit. I don't believe anything. I either know it or I don't know it.
Right, right. You know? And we replace that I don't know with I believe, because a lot of the time we don't want to appear stupid. And so if we could just own up to the fact, you know, I don't know. I simply don't know. You know, it's okay to say you don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like what happens after you die, or you go to heaven or you go to hell. You don't know what happens after you die. You're full of crap. You're just scared of what happens after death.
Unless you are a cosmic traveler, then yes, I've been there, done that. Yeah, so been a soul here many, many times. So there are some of us that have had some experiences, and they're very valid experiences. But we can talk about, yes, we know, because we've had experiences, or the research has been done on the experience. It's that... I think what it is always being open-minded. And just because you don't know something doesn't mean it doesn't happen. It just means you don't know about it because it hasn't happened to you, or you don't know. And the thing is, be open to knowledge, but knowledge that is based in fact, or knowledge that's based in someone's experience, because that is fact, right? So it's be open to knowledge. And when we're open to knowledge, however bizarre it may come across, And look at all the possibilities, because we limit ourselves as human beings in that it's got to be black or white. It's got to be this or that. But if we can open up that there is so much that we haven't even scratched the surface on, there is so much more to understand, that if we open up our hearts, minds, and souls to receiving, we would then be given that wisdom, that knowledge that transcends the human thought. That's where I'm at. Believe in the impossible.
Well, anything is possible.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Anything is possible, but a lot of people make up stuff that and say that it's a fact as opposed to that it's possible. You know?
Right.
And that's where I get off the bus. Because you either know it or you don't know it. You know, if you're going to like believe fairy tales, just because you've been told that as a child, and that's the fairy tale you've been brought up with, then you're making believe that you know something you don't know.
And then on the other side of it, you've got people who've gone through some experiences that seem to be unbelievable. But we are demeaning them by not believing that that was their experience. Just because it's so bizarre, that doesn't mean it didn't happen. And we have to open up our minds and our hearts to that some people do go through some experiences that are unexplainable to us, but they went through it. And, you know, we need that compassion. And the last thing they need is people to ridicule them because they haven't been through the experience, so therefore it's not. Right. So I think more and more people are going through some cosmic experiences right now that are opening us up as a human race, that is waking us up. And the more and more that we're open to that, the better off we'll be as a human race. Because really, what do we know as a human race? We've limited ourselves so much, and there's so much more out there.
Is knowledge. Experience,
yes, it is.
Not yes. Belief.
Right.
That's not belief. That's you know it. If you had the experience,
right?
You cut yourself, you bleed, you have the experience. You know that when you cut yourself, you bleed. You don't believe that when you cut yourself, you bleed. You've had that. That's different. That's
it's other people's perceptions of somebody who's had something happen to them, and other people don't believe it. And they think that those people are just believing it, that it's make-believe, rather than, because I can't see how that can happen. I don't believe in that. So therefore, it can't be true. So I think if it's somebody else's experience, we have to, whether we agree or we don't understand it, accept the fact that was their experience. Because who are we to say it wasn't?
Yeah.
Be open. Maybe you say open our minds.
Have to accept the possibility at the least.
Yes, exactly. And we're all here to have a beautiful spiritual journey. You know, we are spiritual beings having a human existence. And if we can step into that spirit and experience what it is we're here to experience, it makes us better human beings. And it enlightens our spirit even more. So I think it's just the willingness to experience life in all its ups and downs, all its ins and outs, you know, by being present, by choosing to live, by choosing to be optimistic, grateful, happy, and purposeful. I think then we actually immerse ourselves into life, and we really do understand then what life is really about. And you've decided to do that in all your travels and all your wandering, because in your wandering, you've seen some wonderful things that have just enlightened your wonderment even more.
It's an awesome world.
And if we open our minds to that beautiful, awesome world and all its possibilities and all it is to teach us, we realize there's so much we don't know, there's so much to still know, and what an adventure it is to get up every day and discover something new. That's what keeps us going, isn't it?
Yeah, purpose and discovery.
Yes, and just the gratitude for each day. Oh, I woke up today. What does today got for me, right? And explore what it is. And in that positivity, it can heal anything, and it can show you things that are absolutely extraordinary. And, you know, all those monks and all those spiritual people there, people think, oh, they have to go there to find the healing or go there to find the peace. They don't realize that the energy that they're sending out into the ether, into the atmosphere, is penetrating everybody, because energy doesn't have a boundary. Energy can go as far and wide. So just because they're congregating there, they're the orchestra. And each one of them are playing their beautiful instrument. And that energy and that love and that purpose is going to come out in a way that if we decide to tune into that channel, it doesn't matter where we are, we can receive that beautiful experience as well.
I think that tuning into that channel is a key point, you know, because folks go to these teachings, not only around here, but worldwide, and not only Buddhism, but any kind of spiritual aspect you can think of. And as teachers put out this information and the warmth, light, whatever you want to call it, but you have to tune to that station.
Yes, yes. Know,
because if you're not pointed at that kind of stuff, you're thinking about the bills and what am I going to have for supper and everything else. The quality of attention paid by the student is just as important, if not more so, than who the teacher is.
Yeah.
So you do have to make that effort to focus on whatever is being presented to you, because
you won't connect, in other words.
Tune to that station.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you could have 50 people at a particular event, and one will get it so it changes life altogether. Yeah. And 49 will walk out of there saying, oh, that was a waste of an hour or whatever. So, yeah, it's the quality of attention paid. That's a really old and still very tried and true metaphor about tuning yourself to the right radio station.
Exactly. And when you do, you'll benefit. And you've also got to do it with an open mind and an open heart. And when you do that, then you truly and utterly are going to get the message. And the message just might be one little part of it. Maybe that's all you need to ignite you on a different path. You know, it doesn't always mean that it is, you know, the big profoundness and you're going to come out life-changing. Sometimes it's just a pivot that's going to set you on the right path for that life change. But that willingness and openness to receive, right? Tune in.
Yeah.
So it is fearlesspuppy.org or fearless or .info.
.info.
Okay.
Yeah, it's been changed a few times over the years. There was a .com and a .org and a .dot something else. I don't know, but it's .info now. And if anybody wants to see the new book, that's the website itself, it has a whole bunch of information on it. But the new book, just fearlesspuppy.info/new book, and that'll bring you right to it.
Right. And it's free. It's free. And you know, this again is one of those signs for you folks, a free book that could pivot you or set you on a new direction, give you food for thought, a different perspective on life. And it's free. And, you know, read it, digest it, then share it.
Simple street language too, for anyone who, and I did this on purpose with all three books. There's a lot of this wisdom out there
that's too highlighted.
Ancient symbols or cliches or metaphors or whatever. This is like Brooklyn street junkie straight. This is how I see it kind of language. So for people that like the more direct street level approach, as opposed to like, you know, dealing with something that's a little bit more esoteric, this would be for them.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. For the people of like, I don't know what you're talking about, but no, when you read it, you go, I get it. I get it. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Not much in there that has to be explained. What's in there is the explanation.
Right.
Of the other stuff that has to be explained.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. This has been wonderful having you back here, Ten. And we're not going to have to wait so many years to have you back again.
Always great to see you.
And I'd love to have you back, you know, maybe next year, where we can talk about the impact that the book has actually had on society. And so folks, if you've, you know, read the book, listen to the show, please leave comments, because that feedback, you know, lets us know we're in the right direction or that we're serving you in the right way. So don't forget, it's fearlesspuppy.info/new book. And you can also go to Amazon and buy his other books and support his cause, which is to help other people enlighten and awaken our hearts, souls, and minds and spirits, because we definitely need all of that to be awakened. Remember, all the problems in the world have been human caused, even climate change. And if we want to solve that problem, we've got to become the solution. It's on us, each and every one of us. Let's change our frequency, change our vibration, change our approach to life, and choose to live positively. So thanks so much, Ten. Been wonderful having you here. And anytime, my love. And until next time, folks, please read the book, open up your mind, open up your heart, and just change direction a little bit. Until next time, bye for now. We hope that you enjoyed the show. Find all of our shows on selfdiscoverymedia.com under podcasts or selfdiscoverymedia/shows. And for all our current shows, go to What's New. We are supported by you, the audience. You'll see a nice big shiny blue button for one-time donations or follow us on Patreon, and you will be able to support us there. We enjoy bringing you such wisdom. And the next show will be up in just a moment.